Christmas. Get your tickets and passes now at popmontreal.com. A CKUT co-presentation.
Merci beaucoup, Madame Saint-Onge. J'aurais fait l'intro de Francis et les exerciceurs sur les ondes de CKUT, Radio McGill.
How about that? That's one of my thoughts. I have dozens of them. You take a bunch of short ideas and arrange them so that they overlap. That's one long idea. That's a thought. One time one short idea is slightly ahead of another, and another time it's not. They always overlap, that's the rule. So you get a large number of different thoughts. Because one time one short idea is slightly ahead of another, and another time is not. The thoughts are really different, but more or less the same in the sense that they're all short, which is the important part. The important part is to make it short, because nobody likes to pay attention for very long. Some rich man commissions a portrait of his wife from a famous painter, $50,000. The painter calls up and says, it's finished. The man says, hire somebody good to frame it and send it over. The painting arrives and the man's wife decides where to hang it, probably thinking it doesn't look very much like me. And the man comes home from work where he makes a lot of money and he looks at it for a few minutes, maybe three or four, and he thinks I got my money's worth. Then he goes and gets a drink. And he and his wife talk about it for a while. And then they go to bed and that's that. If she put it in a place where he can see it every day, while he is, say, drinking coffee in the morning, he might look at it for maybe 5 or 10 seconds every day for a few weeks, maybe that's too much. Then he's seen it and he stops looking. Total of 10 minutes over 3 or 4 months. Now, that's what I call short. Same with thoughts. 4 or 5 seconds done. I got a ticket to a museum with old paintings and tapestries and pots and things. I found the ticket on the street and I'm interested in those things. I put on my best clothes, which is not saying much, so they would let me in. Smoke crazy who thinks about art. The guy taking the ticket doesn't care. He doesn't care as long as you don't trigger the profile rule, which is you can't let certain kinds of people in, which would get him in trouble. The guards don't care. Their feet hurt. So my clothes get by. Some old crazy who thinks about art. First thing you notice is how much work it took to make these things. A lot of people, a lot of time, very impressive, like cathedrals and that kind of thing. Next thing you notice is how nobody in the museum cares. I'm the only person who's actually looking, trying to keep up my appearance not to get kicked out. Back to no place. Everybody else is just walking around. 30 seconds here, 30 seconds there. How nice. I get the idea. The whole thing is traffic. It's like a huge dance made up by the guy who decided where to put things. The same dance every day except Monday when the museum is closed. It's just a huge dance. Some man is looking for his wife, which is part of the dance. 6 foreigners in a bunch are looking for the toilets. The kid is looking for his mother, who's right behind him. She lets him look good for him, she thinks. Everybody is just walking around, 30 seconds here, 30 seconds there. Finally, well, honey, it's been a couple of hours, I think. We got our money's worth. You know where the bus stop is? Actually, getting there and getting home is more interesting than what's in the museum. And that's why they go. Got to keep moving. I'm getting restless myself. 2 hours is a lot of dancing, even if what's outside for me is no place. Well, actually, it's not no place. My place, I like it. I live in the park daytimes, except summer when I don't go back to the shelter at night. Then I stay all night. I sleep on my bench. My mind is bad. Sometimes I hear voices. Sometimes I see things. Everybody tells me the voices I hear are not there. The pictures I see are not there. I don't care. They're there for me. That's what counts. Sometimes I think my heart will break because of the loneliness. It's so lonely. Then sometimes it's fun. I have friends, like everybody. One of my friends stands out in the street and yells at the cars, which we all agree are a pain in the neck until he gets tired. When a cop car goes by, he yells,
I'm president of Motherfuckers Against Drunk Driving, by which he means the cops, who are mostly always drunk. Then he goes back to sleep on his desk. He wears green pants, which I saw him get out of the trash basket about 3 years ago. You don't want to touch those green pants, because those are his green pants. He likes those green pants. Those are his green pants because they fit. He also wears a t-shirt that says the Pope World Tour, and he wears a sweater, which he says his mother knitted for him. It's not knitted, and he never had a mother, but I would never call him on that. When he goes back to his bench, he pulls the sweater up over his head, and he sings for a while before he goes to sleep. Everybody has their bench. There's enough for everybody. How is that possible? The park is a triangle. It's maybe 120 feet on the long side. 100 feet on one side, 60 feet on the other. Maybe it's bigger. I can't do the arithmetic. There are 10 benches. In summer, sometimes we have a full house, but generally there are just the six of us, me and my five friends. Another friend yells all the time at nobody in particular. We call her Lucille. She says her name's not Lucille, but Lucille's a pretty name, so we call her Lucille. She used to be sort of cute, but now she's getting older and the guys don't flirt with her so much. I don't know where she gets all that energy. Maybe women are stronger than men. I couldn't do that. She yells 6 hours a day. The man in the diner gives her a big sandwich when she gets hungry because he used to know her before she started yelling, and he probably liked her. He's a kind man. He lives with his mother and his father someplace. He has a strange way of looking down when he finishes a sentence. Bonk, his head goes down. We used to think he was crazy, but he gives my friend the sandwiches so he can't be crazy. He doesn't sleep in the park. He takes care of his mom and dad someplace. Another of my friends is called Leonard. I've changed the names to protect the innocent. He and his brother-in-law, Mickey, ran the liquor store next to the park. Mickey and Leonard stood next to each other for 35 years. One day, I think it was Christmas, Mickey comes into the living room of his house late in the evening, and his wife says, "Mickey, you don't look too good," and Mickey falls over dead. She said, "I knew he was dead before he hit the ground, and that was the end of Leonard." Now he just walks around the neighborhood. He's dressed in a suit and tie and gabardine coat. Sometimes he sits on his bench for a few hours, just looking straight ahead. You don't want to talk to Leonard, because he always wants to know how you are. And he says he's going to Florida to retire. He's a good man. I like him. Another of my friends sleeps most of the time. He's asleep right now on his bench. It's raining and everybody is in a doorway out in the rain, bumming cigarettes from French kids who are studying city planning. They don't realize we all speak perfect French. They are talking about city planning. And they don't even see the park. They don't see my friend asleep on his bench. They're looking for action. He can sleep on his bench because somewhere he got a big rug, which is waterproof, so he can sleep anywhere. He is the envy of everybody. Rain doesn't bother him at all. When it's not raining, he sits up sometimes and talks. Now, another of my friends is a movie star. When she was a kid, she was a stand-in for Shirley Temple. She would stand there all day dressed like Shirley Temple while they did the lights and other things. Then Shirley Temple would come out and dance with Bojangles, and she would go home. She says that in some movies you can see her but not her face, because when Shirley Temple was tired and they had to get the shot, they just took a movie of her. It's hard to see the Shirley Temple in her now. She's somewhat older. I suppose Shirley Temple is somewhat older now, too, so probably you can't see the Shirley Temple in Shirley Temple, but who cares? A movie star is a movie star. I like her because she talks so cautiously. Every word is separated from the other by a pause. She dresses conservatively. She definitely stays out of the rain. I think California's broader. My other friend is a man who lost a couple of legs in some war. He doesn't actually sit in the park, because when he got into singing a lot when he first came, sometimes a wheelchair would slip out from under him and we would have to put him back in, which was hard because we are not so young and strong anymore, except for the man who yells at the cars, and sometimes it would take a long time to get him back in the wheelchair, which interrupted his singing, and we all liked his singing.
So we got him to sit with the back of the wheelchair up against the building across the street from the park. He could lock the brakes with the wheelchair up against the building and never fall, no matter how big the singing got. I have to say this, which is not normal, but we don't have to be close to each other in theater inches in order to have the fun of being together. Something happened. We don't have to be as close to each other as ordinary. The benches are more or less a long way from each other, but I can hear everybody I meet, my friends, just like they are right next to me. It's sort of strange. I never would have thought it was possible before I came here. I can't hear a lot of things in the other world. Maybe I don't want to hear them, and probably I couldn't hear them if I wanted to. Too far away, too soft, too many other things going on. But among our friends, it's just like we are right next to each other all the time. I can hear everything. I can hear them singing. I can hear them telling their stories to get the stories right. You have to tell a story many times to get it right. At first, the parts don't go together right. The story doesn't make sense. It doesn't say what a story is supposed to say, so you have to keep practicing on it. You have to get it right so that it says what you know it says, but it doesn't say yet. Keep practicing. Move this part, move that part. Take out this part, take out that part. Remember something that wasn't there when you started. Add a little something here and there, maybe not even true, to give it a little local color so that you can remember it. Then the story becomes a kind of friend to make you feel good about yourself, which is the main thing, to keep away the hurt, to keep away feeling bad, which is hard. I know it's hard among us, my friends and me, because we all hurt so much, not just in the head and the sounds and the pictures, but in the heart. Like things lost that will never come back, the irreversibilities, if you know what I mean. The irreversibilities become quite heavy in this boil your day-to-dayness. I suppose it's true for everybody. Why not? What could be different? The man who commissioned the painting of his wife has irreversibilities, lots of them probably. His wife has irreversibilities. And that's why the painting doesn't look like her, because something changed since the painter took the photograph to make the painting from. Something happened. What is that? Then things keep happening. And the irreversibilities keep piling up, and by the time the painting comes, it's not even you. The painting itself is full of irreversibilities. Irreversibilities of whatever. But what the heck, at least you don't have to look at it for long. 10 minutes over 4 or 5 years. That's where I got the idea of shortness. The ideas have to be so short that the irreversibilities don't matter. Sorry, I got off the subject. I was thinking about my friends and how much I love them, and the sounds, and the yelling, and the singing, and the stories. How you tell the story sometimes almost a whisper, sometimes louder until you get it right. Then the story is a kind of friend to make you feel good about yourself, which is the main thing, to keep away the hurt and the irreversibilities. Now, most of my friends could fix it up, you think. The man who yells at cars could go to law school. No more park, no more bench, no more green pants and the Folk World Tour t-shirt, double-breasted, yell at the jury. I am the president of Motherfuckers Against Drunk Driving, by which he means the police win a lot of cases, defend the people against the state. House in the suburbs, wife and kid, little league games, yell at the umpire, win the case. The president of Motherfuckers Against Drunk Driving, by which he means the police wins again. Green pants and coal. Leonard could retire to Florida. My friend with the rug could sell rugs. All irreversibilities which could be reversed, we think wrongly, I might add. But the friend who lost a couple of legs and some more has definite irreversibilities. We don't grow back legs. So he's a kind of hero in the park. His irreversibilities are real. He doesn't have to feel like it could be changed with a little exercise of the will. He doesn't have to think of himself as a fuck-up. He doesn't have legs. When he sings, I'm only half a man, he's telling the truth, such as it is from our point of view. Also, he happens to be a good singer, so we are going to sing a few of his songs. Now, this will be kind of confusing, unless you didn't.
They're the memories. I don't know what else to call them, from the time before the legs thing. From the time before the bullets were flying all around and all the noise and screaming. And he looked down and there's nothing there, and the pizza delivery boy comes crawling out with a morphine peanut. Bite off the end and jam it in him and squeeze. Hope the man gets through it so we can send him home without legs. From before that time, there are the memories which, my friends, and I will sing for you. Some are better than others day by day. One day this one makes you cry. Next day something and another becomes clear. And you are relieved of the loneliness of the voices, the pictures, and the I could have been, and the yelling. Next day another memories.
Well, we were cruising, you know. Go up to 8 Mile Road for some French fries. Talk to the guys in the next car about things. A little bit of tension, but nothing to worry about. This guy wanted to marry my sister, so we cruised a lot. Couple of beers in the car, smoke a couple of cigarettes, up one street, down the other, talking about big things, you know, life, that kind of stuff. I'm not always totally there, I'm always sort of scared, so there's always two of me. This guy is what they call the hoodlum, he's tough. Go up to 8 Mile Road for some French fries, and you never know what's going to happen. Some guy says the wrong thing, and first thing you know, you're out in the parking lot going at it. I don't like fighting, and I'm no good at it. I always get a big one, and there's like a lump on my face for a couple of days. I always lose. But this guy, my friend, always wins. I mean, he's tough, and he has this attitude like, what the hell? Beat the shit out of his guy, and then come over and take care of me. By this time, I'm ducking and acting like a kid. I don't have the attitude, and I know it. I really like this guy because of the attitude. I can't get the attitude. It's special, you know. What the hell? The guy who insulted you is going to die anyway, so why not beat the shit out of him right here? Actually, my friend is also a nice guy, and like, he's very smart. It's funny about hoodlums. I mean, tough guys. I've got to stop using hoodlums. I mean, guys with the attitude. I never knew very many because I was a sissy. The people I ran around with went to the college bars and drank beer and talked about getting laid and made jokes about girls and talked about their parents and talked about what they were going to do to succeed. The tough guys never talk about that shit. The attitude, you know, it's against the rules. You don't talk about girls. You don't make jokes about girls. Girls are special. You like them. Girls are special. Most of the time you find one you like. She's nice, and you drive around, you talk about what you believe, then you get married. Everybody has a party, and then you're married, and she doesn't expect you to succeed. You're not going to succeed. You're going to work in the factory and get married and have a couple of kids and take care of your mom and dad, and then you get old and die. That's it. So I like this guy a lot. Also, he's into theosophy. I don't know how. And he's got a friend who's into theosophy, who's also a friend of mine. This friend is not a tough guy. He's actually a farm kid. He's big and he's clumsy and he never says much. And everybody makes fun of him behind his back, which embarrasses me because I like him. Also, I don't think he's afraid. I'm afraid of everything, so I admire guys who are not afraid. I admire the farm kid and I admire the tough guy because they are not afraid. You know, not to be afraid. And they're both into theosophy. Jesus, they go to this little church in the basement of some guy's house who is a doctor. The doctor is from South America and he slicks his hair back very oily. And he's got this little church in the basement of his house with an altar and the candles and the cloth pictures on the wall. The old deal, very spooky. I don't go there much. I don't like churches. The one I go to has people singing in rows and some asshole talking about something or other. And I'm always dreaming about being like Tarzan and swinging down on a rope and saving some girl from the church. So this dream is wearing me out and I don't like churches, especially the smell. But I like talking about theosophy. I like this tough guy talking about Madame Blavatsky. I'm really learning a lot. Also, he wants to marry my sister. That's why we cruise so much. Josh. We have to talk about my family because they are so weird with them. Also, besides Theosophy, these two friends of mine are vegetarians. The farm kid smells bad because his father makes him eat a lot of yeast, which is supposed to make up for not eating meat. I don't get it, but I don't care what he smells like. I like him because he has a 36 Ford with suicide doors and because he goes to this weird church in the basement of the South American doctor's house and because he is a vegetarian. I actually don't like meat myself. But I'm too dumb to be a vegetarian. So when the tough guy comes to eat at our house to court my sisters, my mother does the best she can, but she is basically against him. She is against him because he combs his hair back in a duck and because he talks about Theosophy and because he is a vegetarian and because he wants to marry my sister who is madly in love. So she cooks chicken and dumplings, which is chicken boiled for about 4 hours. And then you put these pieces of dough on top until they soak up all the chicken fat. And then you put out the pieces of chicken, which are all coming apart. And these pieces of dough, which are just pure chicken fat, and then some mashed potatoes and some green beans, which have been cooked in pork juice until they are like hard jelly. And for the guy who wants to marry my sister, she cooks something called veggie burgers, which are some kind of vegetable shit in the form of a hamburger, and the poor guy has to eat the mashed potatoes and push the green beans around on his plate. But he is always in a good mood, and he never complains because he wants to marry my sister. Also because he's got the attitude, he's just not afraid. So he talks about Madame Blavatsky. Everybody has to talk real loud because my father is deaf, so every time it's like a loud band concert. And the whole house smells like death because of the chicken and the dumplings and the beans. And then we go out cruising. He's got a nice car, two-door chopped and chapped. I used to go down to the garage when I was a kid to watch them work on the cars. But I was too scared to ask what the words meant. They took out the windshields and the back window and rolled the other windows down. And cut about 3 inches off the parts that held up the roof. Then they welded the roof back on. So the roof was too low to sit up straight in the car, so you had to lean forward all the time. I don't know how they cut the windows. Then I think they moved the shock absorbers to some channels they welded underneath the car, or maybe they just took them out. So the car was very close to the ground, that's all I know, which is probably not right. Anyway, chopped and changed, very nice. When you ride in the car, you have to lean forward all the time because there's not enough room to sit up straight. Also, the ride is very rough because of what they did to the shock absorbers. So this is the car we cruise. Two-door, chopped and chained, beautiful paint job, special chrome, up one street and down the other, talking about Madame Blavatsky and Theosophy, up to 8 Mile Road to the drive-in to get some French fries, a little bit of discussion with the guys in the car next to us, nothing serious, they know trouble when they see it, just a little friendly discussion, no bad words, just testing, back to cruising, a couple of beers. A couple of cigarettes talking about the Oscars. Cruising. Then we come to a stop street. And there's a car ahead of us with 4 guys in it. Dumb shit car. No paint job. Suburbanites. Probably a case of beer. Probably making jokes about girls. And my friend makes a slight mistake with the brakes, because by this time he's really into Madame Blavatsky, and we just tick them with the bumper, no big deal. The guy in the car in the front looks in the rearview mirror and sees there's only 2 of us. So he goes into his barbarian mode and goes a couple of feet forward and puts it into reverse and slams into us the beautiful chrome. So my friend forgets about the Theosophy for a minute and backs up about 3 or 4 feet, puts it to the floor and lets out the clutch, and we knock them into the middle of the cross street. This is about 11 o'clock at night, nobody is around Detroit. The 2 guys in the front seat of the other cars jump out. This is not going to be a friendly discussion. The 2 guys in the back seat are scrambling to get out. Suburban. I start to get out. I'm scared shit. This is going to be a mess. 4 to 2. But, you know. My friend says, don't get out. It's not worth it. He means it's not up to par. As far as fun goes, he just backs up another 10 feet and puts it to the floor with a clutch in. There's a huge roar in the car. He says, let them all get out and we can hit them all at once. At this point, the suburbanites come to their senses. The two guys in the backseat who are trying to get out, stop trying to get out. And the two guys are out, get back in as fast as they can. There is still the huge roar. Let out the clutch and boy, shit, they drive away as fast as they can. My friend follows them for a couple of blocks at about 1 foot between the cars. As fast as they can go. The suburbanites are really speeding, but the car is shit and the guy can't drive anyway. Also, he's scared. I'm not scared anymore, strangely. This is turning out to be fun. After a couple of blocks, my friend turns off and we keep cruising, talking about theosophy.
This guy was a priest. He was a priest in this Catholic church downtown next to the bus station. The church was actually a cathedral. The man in charge was a bishop who lived in the suburbs somewhere. So since he was a bishop, the church was a cathedral. They called it that, but it had gone down a long, long way since it was built. And the city had rotted away around it. The bishop came into town once in a while to check the books, but otherwise he stayed away. He probably went to church in the suburbs, or maybe he didn't. So getting assigned to this cathedral was probably like some sort of punishment for being different. The priest and four other guys who were priests too had the cathedral all to themselves, with a woman who escaped from the war in Europe and was a good cook. And they had everything they could want in terms of the good life. They lived in the building next door. Each priest had his own apartment, joining onto a living room where they had a really great stereo and a huge round cabinet like a coffee table in the middle of the room. You could spin this huge round cabinet coffee table by just a simple push. Beautifully built, beautiful carpentry. I really liked it. I wish I had one like it right now. And when you turned it and opened up one of the cabinets, there were bottles of the very best things to drink and crackers and cheese. It was a dream of a living room. And I think these five priests must have sat around every night after talking to people all day about their problems and giving mass and things like that. And had a few drinks and eat a little cheese and crackers and talk about God. I don't actually know, because when I was there, they never talked about God. They were just friendly to me. I really liked to be invited to go there. I lived in this shitty little apartment and drank cheap vodka and read books. I was very lonely. I think my friend the priest knew this because he was a nice human being, and he probably knew a lot of people who were lonely, and he could see it. So I was invited to go there more times than I probably deserved. We would sit around and have a few drinks and some cheese and crackers, and then we went down to dinner, which was cooked by the woman who had gone away from the war many years ago and somehow got to this job of cooking for the priests. We would have a banquet, four or five different things in the perfect order, very good wine, then some after-dinner drinks and coffee, and a lot of laughing and jokes and having fun. It was like heaven, which is not meant to be a religious joke. These priests would talk to people all day about their problems and try to help them. And then after work, they would go to heaven. Perfect. Now, I am not the religious type, so the idea of heaven coming after the whole thing is hard for me to believe in. So I thought this was a perfect arrangement. Suffer all day, heaven at night. I don't know how many times I went. Put my car in the church parking lot. Knock on the door. Some lady opens the door. I ask for my friend, always being careful to call him Father, then upstairs to the living room. Five guys having a good time. Boom! Heaven. Then dinner. Then back to the living room. Music on the stereo. A few after-dinner drinks. A little thoughtfulness now and then. I mean silence. Everybody thinking. Then somebody picks it up, back to talking. I'm gradually getting the idea of what it is to be a priest, what it is to be taking care of people who think they are suffering for some reason or are really suffering for some reason that no one can do anything about. Then one after the other, the guys drop off. I have to get ready for tomorrow. Finally, I know it's time to say goodnight. Thank you. A few hugs. Back to the shitty apartment. One night, something else happened. My friend says, let's go out. He wants to show me his night world. I get in his car and go to a Mexican restaurant. I could never find this Mexican restaurant later. I mean, we were in a sort of magic world. I thought I knew the scene, but I could never find this particular Mexican restaurant later. Probably too many after dinners. We go into the restaurant together, and it's like I'm with the most important man in town. We sit at the bar, and my friend the priest puts 100 on the bar. The bartender just laughs and pushes it back and puts out 2 glasses and a bottle of the best tequila you can get. Suddenly, there's a mariachi band surrounding us playing some very good music. Then my friend the priest starts to sing. He can really sing. He sings with the mariachi band for about a half an hour. He's throwing money around like there's no end to it. The band is playing, he's singing, and I realize I'm with the most important man in town. Then it just stops. Lots of hugs and money on the bar for the band, and we're back out of his car. He says, do you want to see the docks? They're beautiful at night. Sure, there's a park on the bay. People do barbecues in the daytime and look at the big ships and all of this amazing machinery that loads the ships. I think the men think about what they might be doing instead of what they are doing, and the women are taking care of the kids and probably thinking too. And the kids are running around because of the fresh air, and the whole place smells like barbecue and fun. I never go there because it makes me feel so lonely. But now it's night and nobody's there. The big ships are there across the bay. The machinery is working. It never stops. That's the romance. The part of the world that never stops. It makes you feel so good to know the whole thing is still working and you're not part of something that has stopped. I guess that's like the weather. Why you feel so down in winter is because it's like the whole thing is stopping. Jesus, will spring never come? Just let me start over again one more time. This time I won't screw it up. This time I will amount to something, I promise. My friend and I get out of the car and stand next to each other, not touching the very close. I am beginning to get an idea. I probably have my hands in my pockets. My friend is lonely. He is probably lonelier than I am. This is an important moment for me. I don't get ideas like this very often. I am starting to get confused. I mean, about what is supposed to happen next. I feel like I have to do something, but I don't know what it is. Normally, I don't get confused. Probably because I'm so dumb. One thing follows the next, and I just do it. I never think about the consequences. Now the consequences are right in front of me. All I can think about is the consequences. Now I am trying to figure out who I am, which is not easy for a person of my intelligence. While I am trying to think about this, my friend moves about 20 or 30 feet away. He doesn't say anything. He just moves to a new place. He continues to look at the stars and at the big ships and at the machinery. We are both looking at the stars and at the big ships and at the machinery. But now we are 20 or 30 feet apart. Am I supposed to move? That is one choice. Or should I stay where I am? I have a strong feeling that if I move, something is going to happen that has consequences. I'm afraid of the consequences. Mainly because they are consequences, which I have been trying to avoid my whole life. I am comfortable in the dumbness of who I am. I don't want to know anything else. I like one thing follows the next, and that's the end of it. I don't like consequences, because they take up a large amount of space in my life. I like my mind to be more or less blank most of the time. But now I have 2 things in my mind that I can't make work together. One is that I should do something for my friend, who is very lonely. I should move next to him. Then what? The other is that I don't like consequences. I'm frozen with a kind of fear that I have not felt before. I don't move. The fear has frozen me. I guess now that I think about it, that the I don't like consequences is stronger. Learn something every day. I can't move to help my friend. We continue to look at the stars and at the big ships and at the machinery. We are 20 or 30 feet apart. Something has been settled. My mind is still confused, but something has been settled. I don't don't know how long this scene lasts. Maybe 10 minutes, maybe half an hour. Just long enough for it to be clear that something has been settled. Then my friend says, maybe I should take you back to your car. We drive to the church parking lot, pull up next to my car, and I get out. No hugs. Thank you a lot. It was a wonderful party. I was invited down for dinner a couple more times. We were still friends. After one big thing he did at the cathedral, I got to meet his family at a big party. A dozen sisters and brothers, his mother. It was so warm. The family had succeeded and one was a priest. I think that was the last time. I moved to another city. I sent him a postcard once when I visited a famous monastery. It just said, love your friend. I never learned if he got the postcard.
Dumbest thing I ever did. Dumbest thing I ever did. I mean, really dumb. Now I'm older, I get it, but you know, you're just a kid, think you're tough. Not even think you're tough, just loudmouth. Just loudmouth kids. Can't see the future, can't read the signals. Just practicing, can't see the signals. Not looking for the signals. Couldn't read them if you could see them. Reason I don't amount to anything, can't read the signals. Loudmouth, do it. What happens next is what happens. No wonder I don't amount to anything, can't read the signals, can't see next, can't see what's next. Me and two other guys just practicing. Couple of joints, couple of cans of beer. Wise ass kids, talk, talk, talk. Your mama takes in laundry, oh yeah. Your sister fucks the janitor, oh yeah. Your mama wears combat boots, oh yeah. Your father all bent over, oh yeah. Trying to suck himself off, oh yeah. He broke his back trying to, oh yeah. Dumb shit, why don't he buy it, oh yeah. Now he's all bent over, oh yeah. Your sister smells bad, oh yeah. She don't ever take a bath, oh yeah. Talk, 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 practicing talk, learning to talk dirty words. You've got to learn the dirty words. Just practicing, talk, talk, talk. Couple of joints, couple of cans of beer. Talk, 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 me and two other guys in this park. A lot of trees, a lot of places to hide. Talk, 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 practicing. No wonder I don't amount to shit. Me and two other guys in this park like some Robin Hood movie. And we see these two guys behind a bunch of bushes. And they're on the ground. And they are hugging each other and kissing Jesus. They don't see us. They are too busy kissing Jesus. It's like a man and a woman. And they are kissing and rolling around and grabbing each other all over. Boy. We watch for a minute or two. This is unbelievable. One of the guys starts to take down his pants. The other guy is all over him. They are really going at it. What's going to happen next is one of those things you hear about, but nobody's ever seen it. I mean, this is shocking. I think it would be shocking if it was a man and a woman. I remember years later, I was on the beach with a bunch of people and everybody was dropping acid, which personally makes me sick, and I wandered away because I was feeling sort of sick and I didn't want to throw up in front of everybody. And I went around this dune and there was a man and a woman really going at it, and I was shocked. I forgot about the acid. Everything was very clear for a minute, and I was just watching this thing happening, and I was shocked. You know, it's shocking. You don't think about it when you are doing it because you think you are having so much fun, but you forget about the outside. You forget how weird you are to somebody looking. I don't see how they had all those orgies I read about, the ones they used to have in Rome. I don't see how you can do it with people watching. It would make me paralyzed. I couldn't do it. So I sneaked away as quick as I could. They never even saw me. I mean, the man and the woman. Boy, that was the end of the acid. That fixed up the acid problem in no time. I just walked up and down the beach with the picture of the man and the woman in my mind. Everybody said, "What's wrong?" I just said, nothing, I just took too much acid. Everybody said, it'll wear off, it happens to everybody. And they let me alone. And I just walked up and down the beach with the picture of the man and the woman going at it in my mind. And I kept saying to myself, I'm never going to do that because it looks so shocking. But of course, you do it anyway. Something in you makes you do it anyway. I've got to admit I did it a lot of times, but I've got to admit I never did it without thinking of the man and the woman on the beach. It divided me. It made me into two people, the guy doing it and the guy watching. It's been one of my problems with life. Like, I can't stand to see people eat. I'm eating with other people and everybody is laughing and talking, and then the outside guy appears. And he's just looking. He's looking at me. And he's watching people eat, and I have to stop. No thanks. I'm full. Well, what about some coffee? And I say, no thanks. I think I'll have a drink. Because I know that will cloud my mind. And the outside guy who's watching will go away. And I can forget for a minute that stuff going into the mouth and down in there somewhere. Then later you shit, and that's something too. The outside guy comes back. This stuff is coming out of you, and the outside guy is watching. When you shit, the outside guy is laughing. There's nothing funnier than shitting. If I'm on acid, wandering up and down the beach, and I come across a guy shitting, I would laugh. Probably the guy would laugh, too. But the man and the woman going at it was a different thing. I was shocked. I sneaked away as fast as I could. But this was before the acid. Three wise-ass guys wandering around in this park, and we see two guys going at it like making love. We should have sneaked away. That would have saved a lot of bruises. That would have saved a lot of swinging and ducking. That would have saved a lot of I'm not up to this feeling. The outside guy is watching, and you're thinking, I'm not up to this. Some guys are. I'm not. Maybe that's why I don't amount to shit. I just don't have it in me. The outside guy is watching, and I am ashamed that I just don't have it in me. I'm not a fighter, you know what I mean? I'm a loud mouth, but it always gets me into trouble because I'm not a fighter. Sometimes I wish I were. Mostly, I don't think about it. I'm trying to learn to keep my mouth shut. It always gets me into trouble. But things happen so fast. There you are, your big mouth, and you're in trouble. So one of the guys I'm with starts to laugh. He starts to laugh at these two guys going at it. Holy shit, I know we are in trouble even before it happens. The guy who has his pants down stands up very calm and starts to button his pants. The other guy is bigger than he looked on the ground. They are both very calm. That's scary as it is. When something is going to happen and the other guy is calm, you know you made a mistake. The two guys I am with are scared too. The situation is very clear. But by this time, the mouth takes over. Big mouth always gets you into trouble. There's a short dialogue, this and that, this and that. Then the guy who is bigger than he looked on the ground says something I will never forget. He says it very clear. The other guy has his pants buttoned up. He took all the time he wanted. The guy who is bigger than he looked on the ground says, if there's anything I like better than sucking cock, it's fighting. This is a bad situation. This guy has obviously been through it before. He's serious. He likes fighting. Oh, man, I don't like fighting. I always lose. You get a loose tooth or you can't hear so well in one ear. The actual thing is not so bad. It doesn't last long unless the other guy is a monster and gets into kicking you and jumping on you. That's bad. That actually hurts. But normally, it just takes a minute or two. Swing, duck, swing, duck. Shit, the outside guy is watching. I don't have it in me. I'm ashamed because of the outside guy. It's like a shame because you are too short, and you always have to deal with being too short. Or like a shame because you can't get a suntan. White skin, sun, the skin gets red, and 3 days later it's gone. White skin, too short, bad teeth. All those things you can't do anything about, and my problem is I don't have it in me. I get the guy who has finished buttoning up his pants. He is very calm. He never misses. Bam, loose tooth. Bam, the bells are ringing. I want to be someplace else. I should start running, but I can't because of the outside guy. Swing, duck, I can't touch this guy. Bam, the bells are ringing. The outside guy is watching. I will never live this down. From now on, for the rest of my life, the outside guy knows I don't have it in me. Fortunately, the two guys I am with got the guy who said, if there's anything I like more than sucking cock, it's fighting. The two guys I am with don't even have the brains to gang up on him. He's calling the whole show. First one, bang, two front teeth are loose. Then the other, bang, one ear is not working any longer. Then back to the first guy, then back to the other guy, like ducks in a shooting gallery. Bang, kick him in the nuts. The other guy, bang, the guy can't breathe. Meantime, I'm swinging and ducking. I swing, I don't hit anything. I duck a big one on the top of the head. I am starting to hurt. I've got to get out of here. It doesn't last long. The winner always knows in the first 10 seconds. Then you've got to deal with his personality. If he wants to hurt you bad, big trouble. You are going to have some deficiencies to live with. Fortunately, the two guys who are making love are not bad guys. I mean, they don't want to kill us. They know three losers when they see it. They just stop. No words. They just stop beating up on us. They walk away. They are holding hands.
You never know how the other half lives because of the worms. Once in a while, somebody writes like they know about being rich, but it never works. Why would you write if you were rich? Writing is work. That's the whole point of being rich. You don't have to work. I stayed out of the army as long as I could because I figured out one day I didn't want to kill anybody. I never thought about getting killed because I knew that wasn't in the plan. But I couldn't tell about the other part. That's what I was afraid of. But I got in a jam because I was not so smart. And I had to give up. I surrendered. The telegram said go to the nearest army under penalty of whatever. So I went and I was in the army. They put me in a group that was mostly guys who had just got back from Korea. Fortunately, it was just over. So I didn't have to worry about killing anybody. The group I was in was also mostly black guys, so there were a lot of words it took me years to get rid of. I would never use those words now, because I am not black and they are not my words. While I was there, those words were everywhere, and I got so used to them I started thinking of them as just words. They didn't seem bad. Sometimes they even seemed good, depending on how they were used. They were just words, at least to me. I don't know how the other guys felt. Nobody talked about Korea much, because everybody was just happy to still be alive. It must have been a mess, because the guys who fight are just kids. The guys I knew had just got over being kids, and they come from the poorest families. You were just poor kids. First thing you know, you were killing somebody, and the fear is like food poisoning. You were always thinking about going to the toilet because of the fear. Got to get home so I can stop going to the toilet all the time. One night I was talking to a guy because we had some job to do together, which lasted all night. We started talking about the war. I don't know why. He told me about the war. He said nothing happened in the daytime mostly. You go out on a walk, and sometimes there's some shooting and somebody gets killed, and you get sick and throw up or you shit your pants. But mostly nothing happens. War happens in the daytime for the generals and the politicians, the helicopter visits and the conferences, and the pins on the map and shit like that. Then they leave and the war starts. Night is the problem. Americans are afraid of the dark. For some reason, the other guys are not afraid of the dark, so every night is a horror of fear. When it starts to get dark, you dig a hole and you get in it. You have the gun ready with the knife and the pistol on your lap, and you start praying that nobody falls in your hole, because you don't have time to ask questions. You just kill them or they kill you. If it's one of your guys who just can't hold on, and he decides to sneak back to the main tent to go to the toilet or have a cigarette or have a drink, and he falls in your hole, you have to try to kill him, because you don't have a choice. So guys are getting killed by their friends. And while all this fear is going on, the guys from the other side are playing music real loud over loudspeakers, talking to you over the loudspeakers about being afraid, and it's loud to keep you from hearing the guys sneaking around. But you can still hear the footsteps when they get close. The fear is turned up full blast. You want to shit your pants or throw up, but you've got to wait to see if the guy's going to fall in your hole. Then you've got to deal with it. Hope he doesn't fall in. And if he does fall in, hope it's not one of your friends. He said Korea was just niggers in holes. That's one of the words. He wasn't very patriotic. After that talk, I was glad I was a coward. Glad I stayed out of the army as long as I did. I couldn't have handled it. I know I couldn't have handled it. Then it came home to me. It came right at me. I had a little house, just a shack off base with the woman I was living with. I had to work a lot of nights late. She said there were a couple of guys who were starting to come around when I wasn't there. I guess they saw her in the daytime once and followed her home. They knew where she lived and they started coming around. They didn't come to the door. They just parked outside with the motor running and talked to her. She would have all the lights off, but they knew she was there. Somehow they knew when I wasn't there. Probably just drive by and look. This got to be serious, because when I had to work late, she would be terrified. I called the police. Two police came by on a Saturday afternoon. They told us a bunch of horror stories about this kind of thing, which I guess happened a lot. Their advice was buy a gun and shoot the guys. They said it'll never even come to court. Happens all the time. Texas. So I talked to a friend who happened to be a gun freak about which kind of gun to buy. I wanted to buy one that didn't hurt anybody. He came around that weekend with a huge pistol. It could shoot a hole in a brick wall. Also, probably knock you down if you shot it. His idea was just point it anywhere and pull the trigger. That'll give him the idea. He left it in the drawer in the kitchen. We couldn't look at it. It got so we couldn't even open the kitchen drawer. So the woman I was living with finally put it on a high shelf where she could hardly reach it, and we didn't have to look at it. And we went shopping in the pawn shops for a gun. We bought a little one with mother of pearl on the handle. My friend the gun freak came over to take back his big one, and he couldn't stop laughing. He said you couldn't shoot anybody at 4 feet and expect to hit them. He said you might as well have a BB gun. But at least it was small. I remember it had 5 bullets in it. The idea that you couldn't hit anybody if you tried made us both feel better. So I persuaded her to put it in the drawer by the bed. I was going crazy, because when I had to work late, she would be in a state when I came home. I said, look, just point it out the window and pull the trigger. The idea is just to make them stop coming around. If they see the gun, they won't come around. But of course, that didn't go over. Things just got worse and worse. I was going crazy. Then one night I got home late, and I was in the bathroom shaving, and I heard her say from the other room, they're here, they're out in front. Something went wrong in me. I washed my face and dried my hands, took a deep breath, came out of the bathroom, grabbed a little gun out of the drawer by the bed, and ran out the front door with the gun. They must have seen me come out of the bathroom, because there was nobody out on the road. Maybe it was just in her imagination. Maybe the whole thing was just in her imagination. But I did see a car turning the corner at the end of the road, so I decided to wait for them to come back. I don't know what I thought I was going to do, but I was going to wait for them to come back. I had the gun in my hand. I hid in some bushes near the road. Long time passed. Then a car pulled into the parking lot of the bowling alley, which was across a big ditch from where I was hiding. I knew I couldn't get across the ditch and into the parking lot before they saw me and could get away. And I didn't even know if it was them. It could have been 2 people in the bowling alley parking lot necking in the car. But the strange part was that they left the car lights on, pointing right at our house. It was like some sort of challenge. Like they knew I had the gun and I was waiting, but I couldn't get to them before they could get away. I don't know how long this lasted. A long time. Finally they backed out of the parking lot. Very slowly. I thought, oh shit, here they come. They're gonna drive by the house. What am I going to do? I'm some dumbass sitting in a hole with a gun in my head, waiting for 2 guys to drive by the hole. Then what? I don't want any part of this. I went back in the house, put the gun in the drawer. I sat up all night smoking cigarettes. If they come by again, there won't be a gun. Just me and them. We can work it out.
night. They didn't come by again. I sat up all night smoking cigarettes. They didn't come by again. In fact, they never came by again. The beginning of the age of deterrence. I invented it. Politicians get all the credit, but I invented it. Deterrence. Sometimes when I read about what's been going on for the past 50 years, I want to cry. It was totally wrong. I should have gone out without the gun. The gun was the mistake. What's a couple of loose teeth among friends? I could have invited them in for a drink. We could have become friends. They could come by when I wasn't even there and have a drink and keep the woman company. I threw the gun away. I invented deterrence. Shouldn't have. I fucked up.
Then there are the songs from the radio, which are played all day in the hospital, which are not so clear anymore. Sometimes the songs are sort of blurred. Like the harmony is not quite right. How can I say this? They used to be songs, the bands and the right harmony. And the beautiful sounds from the instruments you can't see. They do what songs are supposed to do. Take you back, stop time, make you feel good. Forget about the irreversibilities. My friends and I will try to sing these songs the best we can under the circumstances. And I will try to sing his long song. The one about the conversation. About when he got the peanuts, he got a real big dose because both legs is worth the major dose. That's the rule. Two legs is a major dose. Sometimes a major dose is more than just take away the pain. You can't tell, and the pizza delivery boy doesn't care. Just bite off the end and squeeze one after another until they stop crying and that look in their eyes goes away. Bite off the end and squeeze one after another. This is a form of love between two people while the bullets are flying all around. And there's all the screaming and the noise. There's a moment of love between two people, the pizza delivery boy, the recipient. Just a moment of love and all that noise and suffering. Here's one. Ooh, here's another. Ooh, here's another. Ooh, here's one for the road. Got to make a couple of more deliveries. Here's another just for fun. See you later. So with that dose, my friend starts having a conversation with God. It's not unusual. It's what they talk about in the hospital while the songs and the radio are playing. Man, oh man, the bullets are flying around and all that noise. And the pizza delivery boy comes with love in his heart and the memories and the songs and the love between two people. How about another just for fun? Then he kisses me and crawls away to make another delivery. I can see all the stars in spite of his daytime. I can hear all the music in spite of the noise and stuff. And then I hear the voice. Sorry, I got into my friend. He had a conversation with God. Now that's nothing to laugh at. When he speaks about it in the park, he is very solemn. Everybody listens. Shirley Temple, Pope's World Tour, a man who yells at the cars. Lucille, who can yell for 6 hours, the man we call the rug. Leonard and I, we all give him our attention as best we can among the voices and the pictures. And the loneliness that breaks your heart. This is something special, parked up against a building right across the street. With the brakes on the wheelchair on and singing full voice, this is something special. I've said too much. We will do a perfect imitation of the way it goes. I can just see him. As far as the eye can see, skin. Almost nervous, dark. Thirsty. Hungry shit.
What about the sun?
Same deal.
Punisher.
Flagellants too.
It's not gonna pass.
Not in our lifetime.
Might as well get down to it.
Long, 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 long.
Now they believe.
Long, 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 long.
Marheen. Let me tell you a story.
He's in it.
Picture this.
War, right?
Close to the ground.
Nobody, right?
You got money.
And
what?
On it.
Right.
And on it, and it's all around
boom,
you.
Right.
Talk the
you can't describe
boom,
it.
Boom, right.
The what was once was there.
Part of you gone.
It's like
you
a
look
hole,
down.
Right.
It's just a hole, right?
The what was once was there.
You can't describe it.
Hey,
no, man.
Nothing to pay.
Nothing there.
You get my meaning.
It's just mental.
What about dancing?
No more dancing. Just watching, you know.
No more scratch.
No more dancing.
Just watching, you know.
It's a long, long.
No more scratch.
No more dancing.
Just watching, you know.
It's a long, 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 long.
Just watching.
Long, nothing long, there.
Used to be there.
Not you know, gone. Half a man.
There was only half a man.
Yeah.
That's me, man.
Half a
just
man.
Just the top half.
Half a man.
Just the top half.
No more scratch.
No more dance.
Can't dance on your head,
good
man.
Joke, man.
I said, like, no more scratch.
Good joke.
Fuck.
Pain, shit. No man, top half is just plastic. For a little bit, I mean.
Just fucking plastic.
Nothing
that
at all.
That picture, man, I never man. Forget it.
Half a man.
No more dancing.
Then the piece of man.
Doesn't
comes.
Hardly speak English.
That's why
he don't have a gun.
He don't have shit.
He's no out there to anyway.
Shoot the other guys.
He there to shoot me. Probably in the old days, just put me
then
out.
Then he had a gun.
Put me out.
This is modern, man.
Now you got the peanuts.
Our favorite.
Don't but he got without the
peanuts. Can't hardly speak but English.
Stick it into me.
Oh, the peanuts.
Give me another peanut, man. Maury. Maury. Give me another peanut, man.
It feels so good.
I got the pizza delivery boy. Don't hardly speak English.
He got the peanuts.
Give me another peanut, man.
Now everything okay.
Couple of peanuts, bench. Everything.
Half a man, no more.
You don't believe
everything
me.
Everything okay.
I hear this voice. I think this is just my mom.
The more he, you know.
I'm listening, you know.
Goodbye.
I'm listening to the more he. I say goodbye, mama.
But it's not mama.
It's somebody.
You're talking real mama. Fast. I like talking to her. Killing
this
me.
This is no DJ, man.
Her killing me.
This first moving.
This is my word. Moving. These telling me. Man, this is what I came
for. Like church when you were a kid.
I'm in touch with the voice.
Listening to the voice.
And he's telling me.
This far as moving.
I'm in touch with the voice.
He's
telling me shit I can't even understand.
You don't know fast until you hear
the
shit. And this is the way they talk. In touch with the voice.
And this is the way they talk.
There's an end. I think that's what he said. My shit, man, it's like
there's an end.
Can't even do it. If I could do it, I could do the whole
I
thing.
I can hear it now.
I can hear the whole thing.
I can hear it in my mind.
I can hear it in my mind.
But I can't do
can't
it.
Do
because it's too much.